Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
Somewhere between science and superstition.
We have such sights to show you.
Strange Eons.
Welcome to Strange Eons Radio. That's Eric over there.
Hello.
That's Vanessa over there.
Hello.
Hey, guys. You can see that my place is in a bit of disarray as I start boxing everything up and getting ready to move.
Yes.
That's so exciting.
I had another run-in with the neighbor.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
He's as weird as usual.
And does he know you're vacating? He won't have YouTube bug anymore?
He does. No, after complaining to me about a few things and kind of hassling me a bit, I said, you're not going to have to worry about me. I'm moving. And he said, oh, how come?
The greatest question ever asked.
I have a list and you are on it.
But other than that, I mean, I am super disappointed to be leaving this big, huge place with the giant windows and all that stuff. But in good things, the new place is not nearly as big as this, not nearly as cool as this, and more expensive.
All right.
So
sounds about right.
Got that going for me.
And are you paring down your stuff then so that you can fit it in there?
I'm going to have to.
Do you want to borrow my Marie Kondo book?
No.
It was very useful. You think you're
thing
before
I have no space
you...
for it.
Very good. Very good. She has a Netflix show. I'll tell you.
Yes, I'm very well aware. Guess what? All of these things spark joy.
Every single one of them.
Thing in my house. No, I am putting together a big, huge half-price books box.
Very cool.
Big Goodwill box. Mm-hmm. I am rehoming the fish.
Aww.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Aww.
That was a couple of year experiment, and it just became too much.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to keep a big aquarium going. So,
yeah.
Are they all freshwater?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's something.
Yes. So when I say rehoming, they're going right into the pond.
They're nearby lake.
There you go. Maybe you finally try a cat.
No, the new place, no pets allowed.
Wow.
The guy is, I like this guy already. We're going through the lease and everything. He's like, so no pets allowed. If you come to me and you tell me you want a pet, we can probably work something out. I was like, I don't want a pet.
Yeah.
That's just heartache.
Oh. Heart of gold, Kelly. Heart of gold. You've got one hidden in there somewhere.
I saw on Disney Plus a little documentary series called 616, which is kind of these offshoots on the Marvel Universe.
Oh, yeah.
And the first episode is all about the Japanese Spider-Man series from the 70s.
What?
Holy shit.
And it is so good. It's like an hour long, and it talks to all the creators. It talks to the guy who brought it over to Japan.
Wow.
And that's a show that you can kind of catch little snippets of on YouTube and everything. And it's wild because it has nothing to do with the Marvel character. He comes from outer space. He flies in on a weird pharaoh looking spaceship robot and all that. And it goes through the entire history of it, talking to the actor who played him as, I can't remember what his name was. Clearly not Peter Parker. But and then it was a different actor in the Spider-Man suit, the stunt guy. And the stunt guy, all the shit he had to go through.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
This guy was not getting paid enough money for how dangerous all this stuff was. It was just him climbing up towers and stuff like that. No rope on him because that would have been visible.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, I was reading a weird thing this week about somebody complaining about Marvel and Star Wars and all that and how Disney is just taking over everything. It's like, there's some cool shit that's come out of that.
Yeah.
Like those Star Wars flyover things or whatever they're called.
I love those.
And it's just like, there is no world that those would have been created without somebody like Disney's power behind it. Because that's a lot of money for a meditative video, basically.
I know. It is kind of like that. Are you familiar with what he's talking about?
It's
called Biomes.
Huh.
And They're just like 10-minute flyovers of various planets from the Star Wars universe. And like halfway through it, you'll realize, oh, I thought I was looking at Hoth, but now I see that the sand marks are red. And so I'm clearly on the planet from The Last Jedi. And, it's really interesting because it's just got very, what would you call the music? I guess it's mostly just
meditative, subtle kind of.
Yeah, very atmospheric as opposed to camera scenes and stuff.
It's sort of like, I don't know what, I know Apple TV does it. I think Roku used to. I don't know if they still do, but like if you pause a movie for a while and it goes into scenes of like the Earth or something, it's very similar to those. It's just you see a Tauntaun or a AT-AT. Holy shit.
That's crazy. I love that. I mean, as much as you, as people complain about it going and being under Disney's belt, I think the bigger the, you know, company is that can, you know, take on these properties, the bigger risks they can take. Because you would never have gotten like Mandalorian if anyone else had owned this.
Yep. Or this. Or Scarlet WandaVision. Witch, WandaVision show.
Yeah, then never. I mean, like a random miniseries TV show to help like feed off of a film and in, get ready for another film. Never, ever happen.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty cool. I agree.
I also have Disney stock, so I just want to make that really clear. Just so, in case that comes back to bite me one day. It does very well, I should say. It's going to be my retirement money. So I, as you guys heard from last week, actually have managed to go back into movie theaters. So I went back and a couple days ago saw Conjuring 3? Conjuring something?
The Devil Made Me Do It.
The Devil Made Me Do It.
I'll probably do just HBO for that one. It's currently on HBO as well.
I would like to hear this because I've started watching like the first 40 minutes of it.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah. It's I think it's actually a nice one to see in theaters just because it gives you that effect of like bigness. I feel like they threw a lot more money at this film than we've seen thrown at quite a few of the other ones. I think the bigger and more ridiculous the Conjuring series gets, the more I like it. Because the Warrens were, of course, reprehensible human beings.
Awful, just awful.
So getting to watch them be like a sweet couple who are kind of superheroes in an absolutely insane setup, I'm way more on board. I'm like, this is the best thing to ever come out of those two horrible humans.
I felt like I might have painted myself in a corner when I said, I'll watch anything that Patrick Wilson is in.
Oh, dear.
And then they kept making these movies, and I was like, God damn it.
You gotta stop, man. Yeah. You gotta stop. I don't know. I think it's fun. I think it's stupid, and it's fun. It's better than Conjuring, I don't know.
Annabelle 2.
Annabelle 2 was Conjuring. Fine, because it wasn't about Annabelle at all. It was about it's very racist, though, because that samurai suit comes out and just, like, speaks Japanese, and they're like, oh, no. I'm like, he's just, like, wandering around going, da-da-da-da-da. And you're just, like, freaking out at him. That's really racist. Anyway. Well,
Vanessa, you can't be racist.
Yeah, right. I know, in those moments.
Yeah, the Conjuring series is very okay with me. I think I've seen 1 and 2.
Yeah.
And I saw this thing this morning or sometime recently. It was, here's the Conjuring universe in chronological order to when the movies take place.
Right.
So you should watch all of these before watching the new one to fully understand. I was like, I'm good. Yeah, I am not going to do
unnecessary.
That. The biggest problem I have with Conjuring is, man, at least especially like the first one I thought had some really good, genuine scares, like the clap little moments. And instead of continuing trying to build those kind of films, they're turning them into action movie summer releases.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe there's a little scares and stuff at the beginning, but by the end, you might as well have The Rock or Jason Statham running around that place because it is absolutely not a ghost movie at all anymore. Kind of like the end of It too, where it's like, what the hell am I watching? What is this giant cave? But
wonders.
So that's probably why I'm not going, oh, I got to see it in theater, because I kind of want to see it, but it is not.
I'm just so excited for spectacle that, like, that was the main reason I would see these kinds of movies in theaters to begin with, because I knew I would not enjoy them at home. So I'm like, well, if I'm going to give it a chance at all, I've got to see it in a movie theater. And I thought that that worked out pretty well. Although I did have a typical movie theater experience of there were some teens at the end of the row who were watching it who kept pulling out their phone and the light was like flashing around. And I was like, is it during COVID times, can I go and like punch them? Or is that like germ warfare? Like what will happen to me?
I, in my mind's eye, Eric, I hope Jason Blum is listening to this podcast and he hears that and he stops and he like, he grabs a pencil from behind his ear and he licks it and he writes a note to himself and he's like, I'll take Eric's advisement here. And then he crumples that paper up and he throws it in the trash can. And he says, no, I like making money and we seem to be doing just fine. So I don't think that he's too worried about the fact that they've turned these into, you know, the Marvel Universe of horror.
And it's not James Wan anymore for this most recent.
He's moved on to bigger and better things. Sure. Well, not better, but Aquaman 2.
Is that what he's doing?
Oh, wow. Really? Okay.
Okay.
No, your explanation of why to see it in theaters is good. That's the best reason I've ever heard, actually, because if I don't watch it this way, it's not going to be any good. All right.
Yeah, I will get nothing out of it, and I'll be mad that I wasted my time. This way I can at least be like, whoa, I'm immersed.
It's nice to see that shitty humans are going back to the theater as well, though.
Absolutely. Oh, Jesus, man. Yeah, definitely. Waiting in line. I will say, there was not a single girl in line for like any of the concessions that was wearing jeans. Everyone was still in like sweatpants and like loose clothes. Like no one is ready yet for real pants, which I was extremely happy about.
It will not come back. I wouldn't expect that soon. Well, as I mentioned last week, I traveled back to Twin to do some stuff. And on the drive home, we experienced the beginning of the apocalypse on our drive back. We got a little bit north or outside of Boise. And I looked aside and, hey, D, check that out. It's like a dust devil, which is sort of like a mini tornado. Mm-hmm. They never get particularly large, but this was a very large one. Like, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. Okay, cool. Drive by that. Keep going. And then for the next 20 plus miles, it was a dust storm.
Oh my gosh.
It was nonstop pedaling. You could hear it hitting the sides of the window and you know, tumbleweeds going around inside and out underneath the car. The car is moving. We rented a 4Runner for the trip.
Oh.
And so I was sitting here for, well, at least it's big. Whoa.
Oh my God.
And watching the semis in front of us move back and forth. And at one point I was glad that I was definitely going to be ahead of these three cars. I see three tractor trailers. So a truck with three trailers behind it, two of them from UPS getting on the freeway.
Oh my God.
And the dust was so heavy. I'm seeing them getting them on the freeway going, I think that's three tractors. I can't quite see them well enough. And as they turned, I was like, oh shit. Okay. I'm speeding up so I can get past that. We finally get to our hotel and the directions send us back on the freeway. So we had to go 8 miles back through it with the wind hitting the other side, turn around, come back with the wind still beating on. I mean, it was, I've been in lots of windstorms driving between Twin and Salt Lake and in Idaho, nothing like this. And it went on forever and finally get to the hotel and try to open up the door and the window said, maybe not yet.
Oh, jeez. Like,
wow. So, you know, I had my own little movie drive.
Jeez. That's incredible. I mean, I'm actually a little bit jealous. I love weird weather situations like that.
Yeah. The worst one I ever had, the weirdest one I ever was in was, you remember my old roommate, Michael? We were driving someplace and he had a Geo Metro and we were in a rainstorm and lightning hit close enough that the Geo jumped just a little bit.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Holy shit.
Jeez.
Or I was listening, driving back to Idaho in my 20s, listening to Skeleton Crew on Book on Tape, Stephen King book. Mm-hmm. And the one, there's something, I forgot the exact story, but it's in a raft and lightning strikes and lightning struck in the real world at almost the exact same time. Scared the hell out of me.
That's incredible.
You drive enough, there's some weird shit. I can't imagine some of the things long-haul truckers must run into.
Oh, jeez.
But that was, I didn't get to watch a lot of movies last week, so.
That's fair.
Well, one of the movies I did watch is brand new on Shudder, and it is called Skull, The Mask.
I saw the art for it and thought, that's a bad name for a movie.
It's not a very good movie either, unfortunately. Oh, but I have to admire the dedication to practical effects. Mm-hmm. There is a ton of blood and gore and spines getting ripped out and chests getting ripped open and hearts getting torn out, heads getting pulled off and all of that stuff. But strangely, I found it really boring.
Yeah. I saw about, I think, 40 minutes of it, and I kind of went, well, because I saw the ads and a couple other things that made it look like a good old slasher film almost. And it felt like the whoever made it really wanted it to be deeper and a lot more meaning going on in it. I'm going, all right.
you kind of touched on it there. I think it's the tone for something this over the top, and the gore is just insanely over the top. Yeah. I think that there needs to be a little bit of a sense of humor, and this had none of that. It treats everything very straight.
Yeah, it does.
So,
yeah, if you don't have a budget in that way, you've got to make up for it in other ways.
Yeah, so I don't know. Your mileage may vary. I didn't love this.
I also checked out something on Shudder. So, Joe Bob, of course, has his season going right now, and I'd seen Train to Busan again with him, and then the next day I was just going through their like live streaming TV channels, and I caught the very, very beginning of Seoul Station.
Oh, the animated one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, like, I've been meaning to check this out. It's literally 13 seconds in. Like, I'll watch it.
Nice.
And wow, that's a film. I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's beautifully animated.
Yes.
Really incredible to look at, but emotionally will fuck you up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's not a fun family film. It's very much about class and the way in which the homeless community is treated.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's rough. It's really rough. It is a film that will leave you in a very dark place at the end.
Yeah, I thought, you know, now the tone in that is very serious also, but it's just better written. The acting is really spectacular for an animated.
It is.
And it really, the Train to Busan movie is a really neat zombie movie. It's a zombie movie for people who are tired of zombie movies.
Yeah.
Seoul Station, I feel, is kind of in that same vein. And then Peninsula misses the boat completely.
See, I haven't seen Peninsula yet, but I have heard it's so bad.
It's not even that it's bad. It's just a typical zombie movie. And I'm like, well, oh no, you guys have fallen victim to the, oh, zombie movies are big. And so
they probably just had to rush out or write, you know.
I guess so. Really, really disappointing.
Yeah, because the other two movies are definitely like not zombie films. They are films that have zombies in them.
Yeah, well, and Train to Busan is such a hard film too. You're crying at the end of a zombie movie.
Oh my
emotional
God.
Ending. Oh.
Yeah. And I will say it's like a different flavor for Seoul Station. It's also an emotional punch, but in a very different way that kind of leaves you feeling really bad about humanity in a way that I feel like Train to Busan gives you a spark where you're like, oh, the father like learns to become a father through this journey. And this one is not, it's not that happy.
Hmm. Fun.
Yeah.
Well.
Did you see any other good dust storms?
No, but I did watch a weird film that I've been wanting to rewatch for probably decades.
Mm.
1979's Hot Stuff.
I don't remember this.
I don't either.
Starring, what was his name? The guy that drove the truck in Smokey and the Bandit, the country singer.
Jerry Reed.
Yeah, Jerry Reed. It's Jerry Reed and Dom DeLuise. I believe it's Dom DeLuise directorial debut or one of his few things he directed.
This is flown over my radar. I've never heard of this.
It stuck in my head for a line that a 10 or 11 year old, or however old when I was when I saw this, just loved. It's a little visual, so we'll see if I can pull it off here. But the one guy, Jay Reed, was like, man, that really burns my ass. Dom DeLuise, you know what burns my ass? Flame about this high.
Oh my God.
That stuck in my head forever.
That's the height of comedy to a 10-year-old Eric Morgan. That's right.
So I wanted to rewatch this, and it popped up on YouTube, something, somehow. I was like, free to watch on YouTube, whole movie. So, okay, I'm going to finally sit and watch this thing. It's good. It was not one that I watched, you know, like Greatest American Hero going, what the hell is wrong with me? But the best description I heard of it is reading something afterwards that said this was a Burt Reynolds movie that needed Burt Reynolds. Mm. Yeah, it's got that same, the whole storyline is there are a bunch of cops who set up a newfangled idea to catch thieves where they set up cameras to videotape the
criminals.
To the future.
That's right. Criminals selling hot stuff at a pawn shop.
Oh.
And so, you know, it's got that kind of somebody comes in, here's a joke. So it's fun. Dom DeLuise is great. Jerry Reed is fine. It's a fun, and it's got a, what's your name? Husband of, or the wife of Bob Newhart in the Bob Newhart Show was the lead woman in it. She's really good.
Yeah, I can place her, but I don't know her name.
Yeah, but so it was worth watching. It was, but I was like, okay, I'm done with that. I'll put that out of my head now.
Every once in a while, you need one of those movies to come as a palate cleanser for all the horrible, mean, gory shit we're watching.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, mine is usually like children's films, but yeah, we each have our own.
I work.
Well, why don't we take a break? And when we get back, I'm going to be talking about a movie just like that for Vanessa's topic. So,
ooh, I'm excited.
Children or messed up?
A palate cleanser.
Okay, cool.
I've been working in the studio.
We should write a new song.
Maybe they'll play it on the radio.
When can we get together?
Let's not wait another day.
Don't forget your guitar.
Got it already and I'm on my way.
It's been so long since I saw you.
I was wondering if you were even real.
Now I can't believe my eyes. Yeah, you're not pretend. I thought you might be my imaginary. Like a stabbing from outer space. My world just got a whole lot brighter now that I can see you face to face.
And we're back. Vanessa, this was your genre topic.
Yeah, so this week I went with what I'm calling devil on my shoulder. And this is where you have either an imaginary friend, a ghost, a demon, something that is talking to somebody else and other people can't see them. And part of the reason why I did this is because I've really been wanting to see for a while now a movie called Daniel Isn't Real.
It's common for people to see things that aren't real. Have you ever seen things like this before?
I had an imaginary friend when I was a kid. His name was Daniel. He was my best friend. He was my only friend.
It's kind of a strange notion, but maybe you should try to connect with that part of yourself again.
You needed my help.
Last time I saw you, you were this kid bursting with imagination.
You need to break out and live.
I bet you can get a phone number from any girl at this party.
You're a painter?
You're an artist too, Luke.
I do photography sometimes.
I'm here because you're here. I'm part of you.
What's that thing behind me?
Your shadow. I saw something full of danger. mystery.
He's taking over, so he's making me do things that I don't want to do.
You do this.
I imagined you. I can make you go away.
Daniel is simply an aspect of your mind.
I'm scared of what I could do. When you painted me, you saw a shadow. What did he look like?
He's weak. He's lonely. And he's nothing without me.
Which we have definitely heard of on the show before, because I know for sure Eric talked about it. I don't remember if Kelly talked about it or not.
Yeah, Kelly talked about it. Then I watched it because Kelly talked about it. I thought, oh, this is really good.
I just remember having an impression in my mind that like this sounded like an amazing film that I really wanted to see. So I thought it'd be fun to do a deeper dive into it. So Rotten Tomatoes for this movie, we've got 83% for critics and 56% for audience. Just kind of a gap.
I think I know why.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Is it because of the last 10 minutes?
I think, well, let's talk about it.
Okay. All right. I'll get there. So the budget and box office, there was actually a huge lack of information behind this movie. I was really having trouble finding much information. All I found was that it earned a total of $18,000, mostly from the United Arab Emirates and from South Korea.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I don't know why. So I'm guessing because maybe it was a Shudder original?
Or maybe it did a festival screening and whatever festival screened them did that thing where they keep it for another week or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a festival darling. The director is Adam Egypt Mortimore, who's got a great name. He's done a total of 9 projects. Most recently, he did something called Arch Enemy, which I have not seen. He did Holidays, the New Year's Eve segment, which I hated. Oh, no. Yeah. You know what? I haven't seen Holidays. I thought it was one I saw, but it's not. Anyway, I'm sure it's fine. Some Kind of Hate and lots of shorts, which I think paid off because did not suck in the directing realm. Writer was also Adam Egypt Mortimore, along with Brian DeLue, who's done 5 things, including Paradise Hills, Curvature, Some Kind of Hate, and more short works. But the entire thing is based off of Brian DeLue's novel called In This Way I Was Saved. So I was pretty surprised to learn that it was based off of a book produced by Elijah Wood's company. Spectrevision.
Nice.
Spectrevision. The story follows, I'm sorry, I jumped ahead. Story starring Miles Robbins as Luke. Miles Robbins has been in 16 things, most notably Mozart in the Jungle, and did a little bit of some of the X-Files episodes. He also was in the recent Halloween movie, as well as what I recognized him from, which was Let It Snow on Netflix, which was their teen Christmas movie.
Of course you did.
Mozart in the Jungle is pretty damn good. It was the first couple seasons. Really
I have good. Not seen any of it, and I'm definitely intrigued, but Let It Snow is definitely where my heart lay. And also the other name, which most people will recognize and tie to this movie, which is Patrick Schwarzenegger, Arnie's son.
That's right.
He plays Daniel. He's been in 17 things, including he was in Moxie, which I talked about earlier this year, Long Road Home, which he was in 8 episodes of, a miniseries. He's in Go North, Scream Queens. Quite a few just little projects here and there. So I think people are hiring him probably off his name and seeing what kind of fun things they can throw him into. Probably one of the more recognizable faces, Sasha Lane, who plays Cassie, which is kind of the love interest in this. She's been in only 13 things, but one of those will be the upcoming Loki. I recognized her as Jessica Hyde in Utopia.
Right.
Wow. Yes. Right. So really, really distinct face. And I also had seen her in Heartbeat Loud, and she was in Miseducation of Cameron Post. And then we have probably the big heavy hitter as far as like somebody who's maybe a bit more famous, Mary Stuart Masterson as Claire, the mom. She's been in 55 things, including June in Benny and June. So, and more recently, she's done just a ton of TV stuff, including like NCIS and Law and Order, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So the story, it's really fascinating, I think, because you're kind of trying to work out what this imaginary creature is. So Luke is a troubled college student who suffered a traumatic childhood with a schizophrenic mother who raised him alone. He had no friends. He never really fit in until he accidentally walked past a cafe shooting where all of a sudden, magically, while staring at the dead corpse of a shooter surrounded by some police and a lot of blood, another boy pops up next to him and is like, "Hey, you want to go play?" He's like, "You know what? I do want to go play. Let's do this." And they become inseparable immediately. They become best friends. They're always together. And of course, Daniel is a imaginary friend to Luke. Everything is going swimmingly. He's becoming a happier child, a more active child. He's going outside. He's doing all kinds of fun things by himself, but still better than what he was doing. And it's going great until Daniel convinces Luke that he should take an entire bottle of some kind of pills, grind them up, and put them in his mom's smoothie, where she nearly dies. Now, mom has said, "We are locking Daniel away. Daniel does not come out anymore." And they put him into a dollhouse.
Yeah, in a pretty creepy scene.
Yeah.
It is. Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of like yelling. Yeah. I mean, it's a little heartbreaking because it's kind of like the old yeller, like, "Get out of here, dog," right? Kind of thing. Like, "Be gone," because the kid doesn't want his best friend to go away. Mm-hmm. But at some point, something clicks and he just gets very serious about it. And they start yelling at each other and Daniel goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now,
end of movie.
And then the credits rolled. So guys, let's talk about this. So Luke is now in college and he is just as lonely as he was as a kid. He is totally outside of everything, all the typical college experiences you're meant to have. He just does not seem to know how to connect to anybody. And he's just not even really trying. He's spending the weekends going and hanging out with his mom, who's kind of become his best friend. But she's still crazy schizophrenic. So there's a lot of like Howard Hawks, like wearing the Kleenex boxes on your feet as shoes kind of behavior going on. Like there's clearly things that are not going well. And of course, his mother has another break where she acts out in a crazy way. And it really, really scares Luke into wondering whether or not he is going to end up with her condition. So he starts seeing a therapist. The therapist wants to know if he's ever had any kind of voices or any strange things that he's come across. And of course, Luke used to have Daniel. So he's like, "Oh, it was like some imaginary friend. I mean, it was very real, I guess, at the time, but I don't know." And the therapist is like, "Well, he's part of you and you need to explore that and you need to confront it face on." So Luke releases Daniel. And so now Daniel is a college-aged kid because, of course, he's grown up in the dollhouse. He's out. He's ready to party. And he is Patrick Schwarzenegger. He's a very, very cool dude. Immediately gets Luke to open up, gets him going to parties, talking to girls, and makes him even realize that he doesn't really want to study law. He actually wants to be a photographer. So he kind of helps him get his life on track. And he seems like a guardian angel. He's just there telling him all the right stuff and all the right moments until, of course, we realize that maybe Daniel is a little darker than he seems. He's trying to take over Luke's body. And when Luke is sleeping, Daniel is in control. And we kind of figure that out across the film. And then in a crazy moment, Luke is really stressed out with a crazy situation. And he allows Daniel to take over his body while he is awake. And it is terrifying. Luke has just stood there watching as Daniel just has sex with a girl who's not his girlfriend and then beats the crap out of a guy within an inch of his life. Like, I thought he was going to straight up murder him. And then all of a sudden he's in the police station. Luke has his body back and Daniel's like, I don't know what the fuck your problem is, dude. Come on. I'm helping you here. So now Luke realizes he has a problem, and that is Daniel is there to try to steal his body and he needs to find a way to get rid of him. He tries to put him back in the dollhouse, doesn't work, tries all kinds of different things to get rid of him, tries to take medication. Nothing is working. Until, of course, the therapist suggests, let's do some hypnosis. That'll be fun. It'll go fine. Definitely being unconscious with both of us using this kind of non-normative therapeutic session. It's supposed to be some kind of, I think it's some sort of African ritual that they're trying out with like a dagger and all these things. So they both are unconscious and the therapist finally meets Daniel. Maybe Daniel is real. And that goes very well, obviously. There's an amazing scene here that I want to point out that the makeup and the, I think it's all real effects, is really good.
Yeah.
In the therapy session, you have Daniel crawling into Luke via his mouth, and he just stretches it all the way open and just crawls in there. And it's really fucking raw to look at. And then when Daniel is inside of, or sorry, when Luke is now inside of the dollhouse and trying to get back out near the end of the film, will he make it out? Who's to say? he's fighting this weird creature running from this strange creature that's inside of this space with him. And it has like this face with these like spikes coming out the top of its head and looks really fucking wicked. I will say like the monster makeup in this film is really incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not going to say how it ends. Let's just say that they do have a final battle that might represent a follow-up to a battle they had as kids. It's great. I think it's a really, really good movie. I was extremely surprised.
Yeah.
I like that there's this question of, what is this thing? Is Daniel an imaginary schizophrenic part of Luke's brain? Is he the serial killer ghost inhabiting this body and haunting Luke? Or is he like something else entirely? And that question develops and is answered in interesting ways throughout the film. The acting feels really good. The only things I don't really like, the ending is a little rushed. I feel like they kind of ran out of ideas of what to do and just kind of were like, I guess we're done now. Like it didn't really feel satisfying in any particular way. And yeah, I don't really want to spoil it, but it's not what you're after. And the only other complaint I had is that Miles Robbins looks a lot like Cole Sprouse from Riverdale, who plays Archie, who I have a huge crush on. And so the whole time I was like, oh, but you're not quite. You're so close, but you're not quite.
Wow, that's funny. I think I must have thought that was the same guy from Riverdale.
Yeah, he's really similar looking, but a little bit rounder face.
Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, this is a frustrating movie for me because I loved it until the ending.
Yeah.
And the way they decided to have that battle, I thought it stretched the bounds of my credibility.
I can see
that. And
I was like,
it switches gears pretty drastic. I mean, I feel like it's a good full circle, but
Yes, I wonder, like you said, it felt kind of like they ran out of ideas.
Yeah.
And I wonder if this is a rewrite to an ending that they didn't feel fit or something. Because it just...
I could see that.
It just doesn't... Yeah. I don't know why. Everything leading up to that, I was on board with this film.
Yeah.
And I was blown away with Schwarzenegger. It's like, geez, this kid can act.
Really can.
Way better than his dad.
Yeah. I know. I was like, where are you getting this from?
hanging out on sets all first 20 years of his life or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think this is a really effective film until it's not. Mm-hmm. I think it's creepier than shit. Everybody, I thought, was just giving it their all. And I was like, boy, this little indie film is my favorite movie. And then that last 10 minutes, I was like, God damn it. I almost hate this movie now because of how much it let me down.
Well, and it's really frustrating too, because there's a little bit of a vagueness as to exactly what happens at the end. And so I Googled it, and all the theories that I was getting were so stupid and far-fetched. And I was even angrier. I was like, you guys are dumb.
The
you
ending
guys are really
of
freaking dumb.
X movie explained. They're very rarely
very
satisfying.
No, I think I was just curious as to like what people thought of the imaginary kind of situation. But I think that the thing that really got to me the most was how horrible it felt watching Luke have Daniel take over his body, especially that first time. I was like, wow, this is so well done. It is absolutely upsetting in the deepest way that I can't even describe. It almost feels anti-claustrophobic. It's like you're in too big of a space and it's not right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see that. It's really well shot too. That enforces what you're talking about, the way it was.
Oh, for sure.
Production. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know if you said, have the filmmakers gone on to do anything after this yet?
Yeah, actually. So the director has done another project since, which was Arch Enemy, his most recent stuff. And he had done couple things before.
Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I saw Arch Enemy. Arch Enemy is kind of a comic book movie. If I remember right, I think it has a little bit of this in it with like a superhero who is
possessed or something.
Or maybe it's a guy in the real world who claims to be a superhero.
Yeah.
Does this sound familiar?
It's I haven't seen it, but I did look up the plot synopsis. And yeah, it's like a guy who's like a homeless guy or something on the streets and says he's a superhero. And
yeah, and that was another one where I was really enjoying it, and then the ending left me a little cold.
Weird.
That's bizarre kind of Stephen King problem here.
Yeah.
I mean, the director looked pretty young. I would say that like he's probably near the start of his career, so maybe just doesn't quite know that that's his Achilles heel at this point.
Well, I hope that he figures it out, because you don't get very many chances.
It's true.
To do this before people go, eh, never mind.
Yeah, I'll give you money.
One other thing that I almost forgot to mention. So Miles Robbins, okay, we've got Patrick Schwarzenegger, who's the son of Arnie and Maria Shriver. Miles Robbins, who plays the lead, is the son of Tim Robbins and Susan Sarandon.
Oh, wow. Good I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, that's neat. I wonder if they like knew each other as kids.
Could be.
Yeah.
Cool.
So I can't wait to hear what you guys picked out.
I think I'll dive in next, because I have a feeling we're going to verge off of the subject line, unfortunately. And I think you'll probably bring us back fine. Because I was, you know, looking up movies to see and did all that shit last week. So I had one movie to watch yesterday. And I was like, this is stretching the bounds of The Devil on Your Shoulder. It's there.
I feel like you had a hard time with this one.
It's there, but it's not quite right. But it's still a cool movie. This was 2020's The Closet.
상태가 많이 안 좋아?
요즘에 아예 눈도 안 마주쳐. 이나야, 저기가 우리 집이야. 이나야, 늦었다. 얼른 자자.
집 안에서 사라진 아이.
집 안에서 사라진 레이나가 처음이 아니에요. 32명의 아이가 사라졌고 제가 10년째 쫓고 있죠. 지금부터 내가 시키는 대로만 움직여요.
그래서 우리 인원 지금 정확히 어디 있는 거죠?
죽은 자들의 공간.
귀는 귀가 있을 곳에. 쉬.
신의 수명이 된 곳에 스프링이 된 지우다.
Korean film, which knew enough to not really have much information on it at all. It was directed by Kwang Bin Kim, who is well known for his short film, How to Pick a Lock.
the flatness on your face there was pretty magical.
And Modern Family, not the TV show.
Oh.
It had a really weird twist. Whoever put up the IMDb thing didn't list a writer.
Oh.
I had to go search a little while and found out that the director is also the writer.
Okay.
But they don't list that. At least they didn't for a while. Stars Jung Woo Ha, who's from The Handmaiden. And I think it was in the movie you did about the serial killer. Is that The Chaser?
Oh, I thought it was The Killer or something killer. Like that.
Maybe it's no, but he played a serial killer. In
I Saw the Devil.
Yeah. In a crazy Japanese film.
Yeah.
But he's great. Yol Hyo, who's a Mother TV show, Sweet Home, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Nam Gil Nam, who's in Zombies for Sale and The Pirates. So the basic storyline is a guy has lost his wife and his young daughter is also lost her mother, obviously, in a car crash. Because that doesn't happen in Japanese ghost movies very often. Anyways. So the movie starts with like a home video from 1998 because it's got the date in it and looks like some kind of a ritual. And the ends with a fairly nice little kick. So I was like, okay, this looks like it's going to be a well-done film. Plot line begins with father trying to find a nanny for the kid because, of course, he's a high-powered architect who's trying to design a museum and he needs to be able to do all this stuff. And his damn kid's in the way, although he's actually very sweet. This is not the kind of movie dad you dislike because he seems to be ignoring his kid. It's the one who you know he's doing what he has to do, but that what he has to do sometimes isn't very nice. And the little girl is astounding in her role. She is so good. You can't quite tell. The girl might have some kind of a sickness, which is why she needs the help, but it also might be a mental thing. So he's looking at nannies, but he's also looking at maybe a camp counselor kind of situation where she goes away to camp. The kid is incredibly quiet and doesn't talk at all. Emotes fantastic. It's really solid. And then, of course, you get to the house and they get into the kids' room and the closet looks like it belongs in a Victorian mansion or castle or something. Like, well, there's the trouble.
Definitely not haunted.
That's right. Not at all. And so the kid is playing and you get the nice little creepy moment, some good little, like we were talking about The Conjuring, good little Conjuring style scares, which were really well done. The father also has panic attacks. Mm-hmm. And so those all come into play as the movie proceeds. Mm-hmm. And we hear a loud scream. The little girl screams and the dad comes running in and suddenly the girl's very talkative, speaking a lot. And I found this under a thing that said invisible kid or invisible friends or something like that list. And I guess you could say he's talking to an invisible friend, and that there's maybe a scene or two of the daughter talking to the demon that possesses her. Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's what I got.
Judges say.
Wow. Yeah, I should have talked about Buried.
Sorry, Eric.
No, actually, this was pretty good, so I'm fine that I watched it. So the girl starts to have problems and then disappears completely. And it kind of becomes a missing children's movie a little bit where the cops come in and things. And I think he talks to her a little bit there. So there's another moment.
Okay.
Another little one.
Absolutely. I don't know. This sounds pretty, she's talking to somebody.
Yeah. In a very strange scene. And I don't know if Korea has a different idea of what a nanny should be, but he explains later there's a call where he's hired a nanny service or something, but I don't remember that happening before. This lady just shows up at the door and says, "Hi, I'm your nanny for the day." He hands her $150 or whatever it is, and she and he leaves.
A very trusting nation.
Yes. And she's horrible.
Oh, dear.
So the nanny's like sitting on a bed eating some crap, and the kids, who knows where the kid is. This is before the kid disappears, obviously. But so do the kid missing thing. That doesn't go very long. And then a guy, oh, my internet's on now. So a guy shows up to check the internet, and it's obviously a ghost hunter.
Oh. I was like, where is this going? All right.
And so it becomes kind of a ghost hunter movie, except there's only one ghost hunter and the dad. So it's like, you know, it needs Zelda Rubinstein or somebody to come in here. You know, somebody say, like that.
Is this like Poltergeist-y?
No, not okay. really. But a ghost hunter kind of thing where they set up all the monitors and the cameras and the sound capturing devices. It has some good, nice little scares. Like they do a little trick where the ghost is in a room, and if he doesn't open his eyes, the ghost can't see either.
Oh.
So that's kind of a neat scene. And well acted. The acting's great. I actually started off taking some notes on this. So I had it in English instead of subtitled for first 10 minutes or so. Mm-hmm. Like, boy, I know this is going to get better when it goes back to subtitles because, Jesus, these actors suck.
Phoning it in.
Turned on the subtitles and it gets a lot better. The story is more of an ongoing thing. 23 kids have disappeared this way. The video from the beginning is the mother of the ghost hunter. There's a lot going on that is Korean lore. You can tell they're doing these rituals and things going, I don't quite know what's going on here, but I am sure if I was Korean or if I knew Korean culture, I would know exactly what's going on.
Right.
Where there's like paper things put on the closets and there's dolls being burned and a guy using a drum to help follow. And the father goes into, I won't tell exactly what's happening, but the father goes into like another world to try to get his daughter back. And it's really cool. It's really almost like Silent Hill looking.
Wow.
I was going to say, it's got kind of an insidious feel to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say that. The story in the end, like we're talking about Train to Busan, where the story isn't the ghost story. The story is a father trying to become a better father for his kid and his journey of figuring out how to do that. So it gets to the end, and it's like the end of Busan. We're going, what? Why are there tears here? What is going on? God, this ending is so wonderfully emotional. Well done. So it is a good movie. Standard. It's not, there's no new ground necessarily broken. There's some reminiscence of The Orphanage in it and other ghost stories. But if you like those kind of movies, it's definitely a good version of that. And I think I watched it on Prime as well. No, I rented this one. This was a rental, like a $4 rental.
Okay.
And since it's brand new, there's virtually nothing to say about it. Like the occult rituals might resonate with Korean viewers, but it does add an interesting sense of disorientation as a American viewer going, this is weird, but interesting.
Right.
Principal photography began September 17, 2018 and wrapped November 29, 2018.
Whew, fascinating.
Yeah. Man, I read like 4 or 5 interviews about this thing, all kinds of stuff, and came away with very little.
Yeah.
As far as beyond the what you're going to hear in every interview of everybody who's promoting their movie that's coming out.
Yeah.
So I would say it's worth watching, but I think it definitely skirts the edge of our current subject matter.
I don't know. I think that works. I mean, you have in movies like Poltergeist, where the little girl is talking to the entity, like I would have counted that. And this sounds like it's kind of about the same amount of just.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of that.
That's fine. I don't know. I don't think you're far off.
How about you, Kelly?
I say no. What was your second choice for this movie?
Buried. I would love to talk about Buried.
I say no to that as well.
I said no to that.
That's right.
Why
that's
you right. kept digging.
I chose a classic that I hadn't seen in a long time, and I hoped it would work, and it worked spectacularly. Mm-hmm. That is from 1984, All of Me.
Roger Cobb was a rising young lawyer whose first big case.
Guess what I'm going to do?
What?
I'm going to come back from the dead.
Was a basket case.
What am I missing here?
You see, thanks to His Holiness Pragalaza, my soul is going to leave my body forever and become one with the universe.
At which time my soul will enter her body.
Ah, good plan.
They put her soul in a bowl. But things got out of control.
I lost her.
What's that?
And it worked. Oh, my Lord! I can't believe this. I can't even die right.
Somebody please tell me this is not happening.
We obviously have mutual control over our body.
Our body? It's my body. I'm not sharing my body with anyone.
Everybody's going to be real disappointed.
Now, Edwina Cutwater is dead and living in Roger Cobb's body.
You know, you have a great deal to learn about making someone feel welcome.
Let's get something straight here. I never liked you when you were in your body. I certainly don't like you in mine.
She's spoiling his love life.
Edwina!
Edwina! My name is Peggy, you pig!
No, let me explain. It's Edwina Cutwater. She died today.
You did it with a dead woman?
He's ruining her afterlife.
I can't go in there. That's the men's room. Just shut up and do as I say.
She's getting under his skin.
Don't I excite you?
Will I go away, will you? I own that body. What if you got it pregnant? You have no right. No, you have no right.
It's 2:00.
I want you out of me by 3:15. Now, where's the swami?
Steve Martin and Lily Tomlin in All of Me.
I dig the hell out of this movie. Wow, 84. I thought it was earlier than that.
No, 84, I couldn't find any budget on it. Box office of about $35 million. Rotten Tomatoes critics have it at 85%. The audience has it at 67%. It was directed by Carl Reiner, who is a comedy legend.
Yes.
And had a string of Steve Martin movies in the 80s. He did The Jerk, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, The Man with Two Brains, and this movie all in a row.
Such a good run.
He also directed, I didn't know this, he directed Summer School in 1987, really? The Mark Harmon movie. Geez. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Written by Henry Olick, who wrote The Ladies of Sweet Street and Serving Up Richard, and Phil Alden Robinson, who would later go on to write and direct Field of Dreams. And this was based on a novel by Edwin Davis called Me Too, Me T-W-O. It stars Steve Martin.
Oh.
And Lily Tomlin.
Oh, yes. That's cool.
And I'm just, if you don't know who those people are, then you better start watching some movies. The story. It's very 80s. Martin plays a 38-year-old lawyer who is dating his boss's daughter and is also an aspiring jazz guitarist. And they make a big fucking deal out of the fact that he has just turned 38. His life is over.
Oh, man. Oh, no.
He wants to be a jazz guitarist. He realizes it's time for him to grow up and really take his lawyer duties a little more seriously. His girlfriend comes and knocks on the door and gives him a big 38th birthday present. And you can tell she's a little wacky. she has gotten him like an African tombstone that she, this big, huge thing that she props up in the house. And he's like, you gave me a tombstone for my 38th birthday?
Hey man, those things get to be expensive.
It was really cool looking. I was like, look, if a girlfriend gave me this, I'd be very happy. Lily Tomlin plays a difficult, eccentric millionaires named Edwina Cutwater, who has been bedridden since childhood. She has a generic malady.
Some kind of issue. We cannot get out of bed.
We are kind of led to believe that maybe she has brought all of this upon herself. But when the movie starts, she is actually dying.
Okay.
And she has employed Roger's law firm to manage her estate. She asks him, when he comes to visit, to make some unusual final arrangements to her will. Having discovered she is finally dying, Edwina has enlisted the aid of a mildly racist stereotype mystic named Praka Lhasa, who has mastered the secret of transferring human souls. And she has made an arrangement with Terry Hoskins, who is played by this very lovely actress, Victoria Tennant. I will get into her later. She is a beautiful young woman. Edwina wants her soul placed in Terry's vacated body so that she can finally experience youth and health. Terry, for her part, she has expressed discontent with the material world, and she will have her soul released to the ether.
Okay.
Well, all right.
Sounds like a good deal.
Roger is there to change Edwina's will so that Terry, as Edwina's future self, will be the sole beneficiary of all of her millions. Unsurprisingly, Roger gets there and hears all of this and says, "You guys are fucking nuts." And so she threatens to have him fired. And she's like, I'm going to have your boss fire you. And he's like, "Why don't you just possess his body and do it yourself?" So she's there at the law firm where she passes. And because she knows that at any minute she could pass, she's got the mystic with her. She's got Terry with her and all this stuff. As she passes, the mystic is able to get her body into this kind of ritualistic little bowl that he's got. And from that bowl, he's supposed to put her spirit into Terry. But in all the commotion, the bowl gets knocked out the window.
Oh, my God.
Lands on Steve Martin's head.
Oh, God.
And we find out about the same time that Roger does that Edwina Cutwater is now in him and in control of exactly half of his body.
Oh, my
the
God.
The left half.
Oh, my God.
There is some unbelievable physical comedy in here, especially when they're just at first trying to learn how to walk together. So he's got a little bit of a feminine swish on one side and then a very manly step with the other, and they have to start talking to each other. They can hear each other in their head.
Wow.
And when he sees his reflection in a mirror, he can see her and he can have conversations with her that way. And it is just hilarious. It's It's ridiculous. It's over the top. It's dated for sure and absolutely delightful. When she is horrified to learn that she's going to have to help him at the restroom.
That's a great scene.
Great scene while he's yelling at himself in the restroom and the other guys in the restroom are like, and he's like, "Just take it out. Quit playing with it." Oh my
God. Do I smash it against the side?
They realize what has happened and that they have to now find the guru and find Terry again and get her placed back in the body she's supposed to be in. Well, when he finally confronts Terry and Terry realizes that it works, we find out that Terry was not a very good person and she was agreeing to this because she thought she was going to get this crazy old bat's money.
Mm-hmm.
Now that she knows that it works, she's like, no way. And so she actually tries to ship the guru off, and it becomes this silly kind of chase movie where they're trying to chase down each other. The blonde girl, Terry, has inherited all the money because and the mansion, everything, because Edwina actually did die. There's mistaken identity. There's bizarre stuff going on. And in all of this, Roger and Edwina are starting to fall in love in his body.
Oh,
wow.
That is very, very 80s sounding.
It is the most 80s.
It's a delightful little comedy. The magic in it doesn't quite work in the way that only 80s movies that are good allow you to forgive. Like, think of
Ghost.
Like Back to the Future.
Right.
Is this movie that's brilliant and you love it and everything, but it makes absolutely no sense that he's watching a photo of his relatives disappearing right. because he's changing time. You're just like, that's not how time travel works. Why would you still have this photo? Why would there have ever been a photo? But you're totally fine with it.
Yep.
Vanessa, you've never seen this movie?
I've never seen this movie.
It is also available on Prime. Will they get her into the right body? Will they be able to stay in love? Who knows?
I mean, it's only the 80s in a Steve Martin movie.
Yes. Yeah, when he was physical comedy, he is so good at that stuff, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's him and Carl Reiner. So they've done a ton of movies together prior to this, and they've all been hits. So they're very comfortable with each other. Everybody is working at, you know, the top of their game. I'll just say this. The film was originally supposed to star Chevy Chase and Goldie Hawn.
Oh. Huh.
It was written for them.
Hmm. They declined.
Yeah. Or something happened. Yeah. Probably Goldie actually was like, I have worked with him a couple of times now, and I shall not do so again. Yes. Chevy is a well-known asshole. Terry Hoskins, played by Victoria Tennant. Steve Martin and Victoria Tennant met during the making of the film and were married in 1986, staying together until 1994. Oh. Reportedly, the actress was so smitten with Steve Martin on that first day that she rushed home to tell her male roommate he had 3 days to move out. So love is in the air, and the relationship blossomed and lasted for a while, but, you know, Hollywood marriages are...
It's hard to stick.
Yeah, I mean, a year of Hollywood marriage is like 7 years in regular marriages. So.
True. Did you ever watch much Lily Tomlin? She did that thing called The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe.
I did not see that, but you know that I'm a huge fan of 9 to 5.
Yeah.
And she's great also amazing in that. And did she do The Incredible Shrinking Woman?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I mean, that's not a good film, but I liked it. She was good in it.
Exactly. Yeah, that did some great stuff.
Yeah.
I'm happy that she's still working so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that I've heard some stories that she can be difficult. Mm-hmm. I think that you can't be too difficult in this town before people say, we're not going to work with you. So
for sure.
So
for
she
sure.
must be okay.
Yeah. There's the right kind of difficult.
Yeah.
You know, where by the end you go, oh, you know what? You're probably right.
Well, we also know she was coming up in a time where, powerful women were not looked upon very favorably. So maybe just holding your own counted as being difficult in Hollywood in the 80s and 90s. So
For sure.
Anyway, I love this movie so much. And I was so glad that you picked this genre because I was like, what am I going to do for this? Because I've already done too many movies that are kind of with this for like, different topics.
Right. Like Invisible or like there's a lot of kind of almost crossover.
Right.
Yep.
So I'm glad you were able to
find... We've done Split Personalities and everything. I was oh my God, not Scorsese. What was the movie we did with the Split Personalities? And I chose De Palma.
Raising Cain?
Yeah, Raising Cain. I'm like, that's perfect because he's literally sitting next to him speaking in his ear. I wonder if they'd notice if I did that again. But this one turned out to be such a delight to watch again. So, yeah.
Nice. I'm glad you found such a unique and like perfectly fitting.
It was absolutely perfect for me because this is one of those movies that, like I was saying earlier, is a palate cleanser.
Yes.
I forgot how fun Steve Martin was. It was killing me. I mean, Steve Martin has always kind of looked old with his gray hair and everything, but it was killing me. They're like 38. My life is over. Just like, oh boy.
Yeah. Don't watch the one where he marries off his daughter.
That was Father of the Bride.
Yeah, Father of the Bride. Because that, like, he's not that old. And he keeps talking about being like early 40s and his life is over and everything. He's like going through midlife crisis and all. I'm like, oh my God.
You remember the scene in that film where he's talking to the, I think it's a wedding planner, and he had a heavy accent and he could not understand anything he said.
Mm-hmm.
That exact thing happened to Dina and I when we were planning our wedding. It was me, Dina, Marth, and Roz. And he's speaking with this heavy accent, and Dina and I kind of look at each other, looking at Marth. He leaves the room. Marth leans over. I can't understand anything this guy's saying. So the three of us cracked up big at that.
That's so good.
Well, there we go. Devil on my shoulder. I think that makes it my choice for the next genre.
Yeah. Yep. What do you have for us?
Well, Eric reminded me it was my choice in the break.
Oh, good.
And I had to come up with something quick, but I think this might yield some interesting results. So how do you guys feel about Anchors Away, Horror on the Water?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I'll even accept horror coming from the water.
Okay.
So, but... Right. Jaws is right on.
And triangle, Barry Truck Stop Triangle.
That's just it. We have talked about some other stuff that would have fit into this. But I'm thinking, you know, people find there. Stuff oh, yeah. where there's boat horror.
Oh, there's lots.
It's I've been summer. Waiting to Blimey. Jump into some boat horror. So this might be the time. I'm not even joking.
Wow. Why didn't you make it one of your own picks then?
Well, because I didn't have it on my enormous list.
Add another one to the list.
Okay. So that's what we will do for next week then. Horror on the Water. Anchors away, guys.
Ahoy hoy.
Many, many... Thanks to everyone who is still participating in the Value for Value model. We will shortly have information on how you can pick up one of these amazing coins that Danny Williford made for us. T-shirts are being bandied about. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be stuff going on. We'll have some kind of storefront available very shortly, I think.
Yes.
And thanks everyone for liking and sharing the posts, reviewing. Hey, I keep hearing on all these other podcasts, you got to get out there and review. It makes a huge yes. difference of whether we are seen on a page when you're searching for us.
Yeah.
And some of them are as blatant to say, hey, 5-star reviews only. We will accept no less.
We haven't mentioned in a long time. The 5-star challenge would still be something absolutely. Willing to do.
Which so, is you write a 5-star review. You tell Eric, hey, I want you to talk about this particular movie. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens.
And he's forced to watch it.
we'll even cheese it up a little more. Mm-hmm. Now that Spotify is... closing in on Apple, their reviews are a little more important.
Wow.
So if you hop onto Spotify, if you've already given an Apple review, you hop onto Spotify, you can give me another
hey
movie.
Man, copy paste.
I was just going to say, copy and paste right. that review. And then make Eric watch that same movie again.
What do you think of it this time?
Depend on the film.
All right, so that's it. We will be back in 1 week. We are talking Horror on the Water.
Fire in the Sky.
Our show is recorded somewhere high above Naval Station Everett at the nexus of all realities and is engineered and produced by Eric Margaret. Our theme music is Strange Eons Part 1 by the band Nightshade and is used with permission. Find Strange Eons Radio on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and wherever fine podcasts are found.
Have a typical movie theater experience of there were some teens at the end of the row who were watching it who kept pulling out their phone and the light was like flashing around. And I was like, is it during COVID times? Can I go and like punch them? Or is that like germ warfare? Like what will happen to me?